Hi, welcome. This is Dr. John DeMartini. This is one of the most amazing and inspiring shows that you can listen into. If you want to be on the edge of your seats, if you want to open up your heart, if you want to expand your mind, and you want to meet incredible people, stay tuned because you're just about to experience a transformative radio show that will change your life. And you're listening to the Dr. Pat Show that's coming up right next.
Welcome to the Dr. Pat Show. Talk radio to thrive by. Powerful, inspiring, and coming to you live, bringing you stories of people like you and me, busting through and living life full out. Get ready to dare to wonder what your life would be like if you knew you could not fail.
Everybody, welcome. Look, you all have heard me talk about my journey growing up basically illiterate. My only portal to the world of reading was through comic books, all of them. Even before anybody knew how to say Marvel correctly, I was reading them. I was understanding them. They were a little bit bizarre. Why is that? Because there is a fascination for those of us that live in this world. We want to be taken to the next level place. And I say that, the next level place in our mind, the next level place in our consciousness, the next level place that may give us freedom, albeit for an hour or two. We want to be taken on a journey. We want to be intrigued. We want to understand, too, that if we live in a world where we get to explore and take a journey that has to do with sci-fi, spirit, ego, and a battle for the soul of humanity, we're going to dial in. And that's what today is about. I am so thrilled to have Michael Kelly joining me here today. The Devil's Calling, part two. We're going to tell you about part two and part one. But what if you can read an incredible novel? And what if you could read about the journey of some of the characters in the novel, maybe one or two in particular? But what if you can relate for some of the struggles, for some of the decisions? And what if now more than ever, the journey you take not only gives you insight from something we call a novel, but might even give you inspiration and hope? That's what I want to say about The Devil's Calling. Now, you can find this book on Amazon, but today you're going to hear right from the author, Michael Kelly. Michael, it's great to have you.
Thank you. That was a great introduction. I appreciate it.
Look, how many quotes do we have about imagination, right? Creativity, right? Einstein wants to take all the credit, of course, even in his death for that. But we are now in a place, and Hollywood is finding this out, Michael, big time, you know this. Once upon a time, you could write you can have a movie come to the screen and it would be a love movie. Now you can't even get people to go to the box office unless it has something flying in the air that you don't recognize. But you've tapped into more than this in the book. Let's talk about this being the second book of the first book and what it is about you and the message you're bringing forth in these characters that is so timely for where we are today in the world.
Well, the three books, it's a trilogy, and they really came almost fully formed. It's taken me a decade to get to where I am, with the second book being published in October, and the third book is already in draft form. But I had started studying quantum physics and Eastern mysticism, and I was very fascinated by the intersection of the two and came up with my own quasi-scientific theory of everything, constant creation theory. And it led to a thought about the process of awakening or self-realization and having a character on that arc over the course of three books. A literature professor whose friend discovers this theory of everything and then goes missing in the first book. And he and a quantum physicist, Professor Emily Edens, go in search of that missing theory, and as well as the mystery of why the friend was killed. And they meet some bad people and some good people.
Oh, yeah.
One of the good people is Juno. And she
just like in life, though, right?
Yes.
Right.
And Sean in the first book comes to view people, right or wrong, because it's somewhat judgmental, as either heart-centric or love-centric or egocentric. And the characters in the book kind of fall into those two buckets. And obviously, even the heart-centric ones have flaws and mistakes, and he starts out in a very circumscribed life and with a bit adolescent minded. And over the course of the three books, he has very thrilling adventures, but they're very mix of science and of spirituality. And just by taking the course of each book being 9 years, Quantum Leap, I surprised myself because the first book was a lot of synchronicity and magical realism, but it was based in 2018 or real time. The next book is in 2027. So by definition, I was writing science fiction.
Yes.
And The Devil's Calling is about that tension between AI and ethical AI and spirituality.
Yeah. I love that you did this.
Thank you.
I love this book. And you're probably wondering why. I mean, who is this? Who is this, Pat? Look, I don't know if you and I were drinking the same Kool-Aid during that period of time, but something happened. You know, both of us come from corporate backgrounds. I say corporate, Wall Street, whatever you want to say about it. I learned a lot from that. I also learned a lot about myself. But here we are, we're talking about something that has powerful message in it, yet it's quite entertaining. The friction between AI and spirituality, that is not a faux belief. So you can imagine what happened when I announced the launch that we're getting ready to really crowdfund for, of AI for the Soul. Can you imagine? But then reading your book, I'm like, he's right. He's right. There is this tension. But then with every tension, Michael, let me ask you this. Doesn't it provide a portal for a greater optimism and a greater solution than we can imagine, right? Or no?
No, I totally abide by that theory. I think there is a quickening going on both in the AI as an extension of ego and power and information and judgment. But AI is neutral. AI could be very positive and even what's focused on in The Devil's Calling, brain-computer interfacing and this idea of a hive mind mentality.
Oh, yeah.
Well, brain-computer interfacing is great for potentially Alzheimer's patients. It can also provide paraplegics the ability to walk. There's already a video of a monkey playing Pong with just its brain. So there's some great potential in all this. I'm going to bastardize the Shakespeare line, but
that's okay.
There's nothing good or bad, only man makes it so. This is not a bad judgment on AI. It's AI needs a heart and needs to be consciously and ethically rolled out.
Yeah, and that's really the point of what I want to talk to you, because there's a reason the book is called The Devil's Calling, and I want to get to that. But I love that you're bringing this conversation to the forefront, because you're actually putting the soul in AI. Well, that's my word. Those are my words. But my sense is you're giving us a sense of reality in this book and the journey of the characters in this book, and really facing what people face every day, but what we are yet to face with the evolution of this. So I'm taking myself into, what did you say, 2027?
Yes.
By the time 2027 comes, everything in this book is pretty much going to come to life, I think. But we are fascinated with this, aren't we? I mean, let's talk about the devil's calling and what it means. But let's also talk about the fact that we have a pop culture right now that got to accept Arnold Schwarzenegger and the Terminator becoming the good guy.
Right.
Right? We accepted a movie that came out in 1999, hated the last version of it, but we accepted AI, the Matrix, and spirituality, didn't we?
Yes.
But we're still confused about it, aren't we?
Yes, very much so. Well, one of the contentions of the devil's calling, which I think you may adhere to, is that there's an acceleration going on. So some of this sounds fairly fanciful for only 5 years from now. But if you look at the leaps and bounds of certain portions of AI, because it's not all linear, as Elon Musk likes to point out, we landed on the moon in 1969, a human. Now we can't even get out of orbit. So not all AI, not all advances are linear, but some of these are, I think there's an acceleration both on the spiritual side and on the artificial intelligence side.
I totally agree with you. I mean, when we launched this network, I can't remember where in the book I related to this, but when we launched the network and when I started my show 20 years ago, and I said I was going to do all positive talk and create a positive talk network, you could hear the boos from Alaska, right? If you ever write something and somebody's like booing you from Alaska, you could hear like, okay, yeah, a woman. It would take a woman to say that. That's what somebody said to me. And then we launched the network, and our network is going to grow, but it's going to grow because of technology advancement that we built 6 years ago.
Right.
How can we involve the messages of heart and soul if at some level we're not looking at the potentiality of technology / AI? Even Schwarzenegger did that.
Right. Yes.
But don't the books do that for people? I mean, let's talk about some of the characters and some of the questions. You know, whether it's protagonists of self-realization or not, there are powerful questions that these characters are facing. Let's talk about that.
Well, yeah, the lead character, Sean Byron McQueen, is, again, starts out in a very circumscribed, adolescent-minded way. He's a widower. He lost his wife. But he had historically spiritual experiences and philosophical background. And so he kind of hasn't lost that entirely. He used to teach a class by Huxley, or Huxley's Perennial Philosophy. And Huxley has a great line about man's sole mission on earth, I'm going to paraphrase, is to achieve the true self and divine ground. Now, that's really the question that he posed to his students at the time, and the question of the three books. If you're fed and if you have shelter, if self-realization is real, how can that not be a major part or even the biggest part of the focus of your life? And so that question's always with him. He doesn't always answer it correctly, and he goes off on tangents and gets in trouble and has big adventures. It's an interesting arc to follow. And for me, it's also been a learning experience because as he awakens, as he self-realizes, I have to grow as an individual as well. And the research into, Eastern mysticism, quantum physics, near-death experiences for the third book, shamanism, is all, how much fun is that to do that kind of research to then put it into the books?
It's extraordinary. And thank you for bringing that up. I mean, folks may not know that there is a third book. And I love what you're talking about. But before we go any further, I need people to know how they can find you, talk to you, get a hold of you, get the books. Because in this very short interview, we're going to touch on a couple of key points. But there's so much more here, Michael. How do they do this?
Well, all the normal out, all the usual outlets are suspects, like Amazon, Barnes and Noble. But, you know, if you go to the local bookstore, if it's not carrying it, they'll be happy to order them for you. Mm-hmm. And obviously, we'd like to support the local bookstores. I also have a website, Michael Kelly with an EY, author.com. And you can, if you go on the website, then you could just click on a button and get, I think it goes to Amazon.
Yeah. And at the beginning of this interview, you all, you saw the trailer we put out front there. So that you have a sense of, you know, right out of the gate, what we're talking about. I think I said this to you before. I'm having a hard time for these books not being made into a movie. I'm having a personal struggle with this. Because if you look at the multi-generational impact of your conversation in these books, you'll find that there's a reason why at many, many different ages, in many, many different places, this is so relatable. Don't you think that's true, Michael?
Yeah, I do. I envision them for the big screen as well.
And often, I do. Hurry up.
When I'm doing a scene, I often envision, you know, a director and how he would place the characters and describe. And it sounds very anti-spiritual, but Tarantino is, there are some scenes that are, I'm sorry, it's Tarantino-esque.
It is. It's very much so.
And so, you know, the way he just can set a scene is so brilliant. And so there is a visual nature to the books that I think would lend itself, but it'll be a big budget movie because you go from New York City to Kathmandu. Mm-hmm. In the second book, you're in Oregon in the Willamette Valley. So there's lots of moving around and lots of big themes and earthquakes and things like that. That would be, I think it'd be, have to be a fairly big budget film, but I'd like it to be also independent and, with a deep dive into the actual themes of the books.
Yeah. You know, as I continue to read, I'll tell you what I was really struck by. And, you know, there are many of us that have grown up with many different books. I've been around for a little while. So I've grown up from, you know, I don't want to date myself, but
with me, you can't, don't worry.
Yeah. The other day I said, somebody mentioned War of the Worlds and I said, oh yeah, it was a great movie. It was done in black and white. They say, the one with Keanu Reeves? I'm like, no, that's not the original, right?
I didn't even know Keanu Reeves did one.
Oh, they did a remake. They're doing a remake of everything. Tom Cruise did one. But here's the thing. And that is like even a television series. But here's the thing I love about this. There are directors and producers now that know the importance of this. They've dabbled in it. Spielberg dabbled in it. In his movie AI, really artificial intelligence. It was a dabble. But you've taken this to the level of multi-generations and where people are. I wanted to spend these few minutes to talk about the consciousness of humanity and how prominent this is in the journey pathway in the book. At least from my point of view, I see it.
Well, you know, that's part of my belief and part of what's in the book, that consciousness is what is all pervasive. It's your consciousness, my consciousness, everyone's consciousness is pretty much, it's just consciousness. And whether you can actually, you know, project your consciousness, you can have out of body experiences.
Yeah.
And there's lots of the noetic sciences that have been proven now. They used to be thought of as magic, but telepathy has been proven to be real. You know, Einstein's spooky action at a distance, where things instantaneously communicate that are separated by great distances are real. Precognition has been proven to be real. They don't know how it works.
That's right.
But these are really fascinating topics. And as it develops, the my contention or the book's contention is that what distinguishes us from AI is AI may become super intelligent or sentient. I never can pronounce this word, sentient.
Yeah, exactly.
But it's never going to have a consciousness. It may be even in the third book, it mimics compassion and loving compassion. It's been programmed to do that.
That's
but
right.
That doesn't have it independently. It doesn't have a consciousness that necessarily can leave our bodies when we die or come into another life if there is reincarnation.
Hence the great contrast, conflict Let me just throw some words out to you. The great points of interest, the great tension, the great friction for people to explore as they read this, because we're going through our own exploration and what is real for me? What have I learned coming out of COVID? What do I believe now? You know, where is my future? How does it relate? You know, we saw an explosion in technology that happened during COVID that, let me give you an example. All of the 12-step programs, every one of them, I was part of one of the organizations that held all the conferences. Every time I presented to open up technology for online meetings, I was given 5 minutes, I was out of there in one. COVID, though, did more things to open up the field of knowledge transfer, sharing, and bringing people together in ways that were, may I say, forbidden. Now, I'm not saying that's AI, but what I'm saying is we're starting to see humanity's need for another version of technology that enables us to connect better. You see what I mean? From a human perspective.
Some of that gets into the third book, where there now are robots are actually, you know, as there's an aging population, the population's dwindling. In 2036 is the third book. And as that's happening, these robots are providing care for the elderly. They're doing a lot of the menial labor that no one else wants to any longer do, or there's not enough young population to do it. And so there's a lot of good things coming from these robots. And I'm not going to spoil whether, because the one key robot in the third book, you don't know whether he's good or bad until the end.
I love that.
But yeah, it's 2036. And by that point, you know, we do have a dwindling population, and and that can create real problems, though it should be good for the environment and other things. Mm-hmm. There are certain things that AI is going to have to fill in to make our lives continually get better.
You know, I know this is a short interview, but I really have to talk about some of these other things. I do believe there's so much of who you are and some of these in the characters in the book and the journey. How can we not be? There's so much of me in my network, right? I mean, however, you really take it to a place where you've got to get the next book. You've got to follow it. Why do you think, from where you sit now, that this is so relatable to so many people across generations? Where have we evolved to here in our own sense to be so open to this?
It's a good question. I think that, you know, one is the ordinary person, I think, is now has the ability, and I would say 50% of the population is interested in spirituality, is interested in Buddhism, is interested in meditation and yoga. So mm-hmm. I'd say over half of the world is now oriented towards this, have enough comfort in their lives to be able to be oriented, and something's moved in the gestalt to allow for this. And so therefore, I think it's timely from that perspective. And I also don't think you have to be an aesthetic yogi on a mountain and a hermit. I mean, that's one way, and I'm sure it may actually be an easier way to reach self-realization. But I think ordinary people are that self-realization and enlightenment is possible within our lifetimes. Yeah. Though ultimately, I think in the third book, I don't think this ruins the third book, but Juno contends in the third book that death is the ultimate liberation. And as long as we're in the physical form, we can taste transcendence, but we're not necessarily going to be able to live there at all times.
Yeah. You know how you can validate what you just said? You don't need validation. You know what you're doing. I certainly don't need to validate it. What I'm excited about is what you're bringing forward, because I had more questions. I had to go back and read the first book again. I had more questions now than I did, I don't know how long ago it was that I read, but I had more questions because I've changed. And the reason that I love being able to talk to you about this and the validation of this, it's really important for us to really look at this and look at this closely, is that people are questioning things. They're questioning things in ways they haven't before. It's hard for me to really summarize that, but it is through our questioning, whether you want to call it resistance or you want to call it friction or whatever you want to call it. The minute we ask a question and we want to ask the question to understand, we are in, by very nature, aren't we, exploring our inner selves? Otherwise, yes. Why bother with the question?
And I think, you know, to your point, it's interesting from yoga teachers to bartenders to some of my friends who like Dan Brown stories.
Yeah.
It seems to have a real cross-section of fans. There's also an undercurrent, I would say, the 10-20% that really dislike it. And I assume that's because they're not yet spiritually minded, or they're looking for a single genre that this doesn't necessarily fit into when they buy the book. So that really, by the way, my ego was surprised by how nasty some people can be on social media.
They're crazy. Look, I know they are. And, you know, and it hurts. I was just talking to somebody that talked about their heart hurting. But I listened to that. And I listened to it because my friend Don Miguel taught me how to not take anything personally. But it's hard when you've got the baby. Look, I have a network that's going to grow. And the backlash that you can imagine we're getting, especially when I announced AI for the Soul. Are you kidding?
Right.
But sometimes, just like you are, you follow your heart, you follow your guidance. Because they're going to be 80%, Michael. They're going to be 80% that are like me and want to understand ourselves more. And you're doing it in such a creative, beautiful, and I must say, there are some challenges in here. Way, what's your vision as you move forward? And I can't thank you enough for giving us a renewal sense of imagination and creativity, but one that also taps into our humanity, kind of in the way that E.T. did. My friend Dee Wallace was in that movie, E.T. But E.T. really did that for people. Now, okay, look at E.T. now, and that's like so old school, but it really wasn't, was it? But I want to ask you this. How do you want us to help you move forward? And what's your vision for it?
That's a great question, because I, you know, this is all new to me. And I was very surprised to know that a 450-page book cost twice as much to produce and edit and to print as a 250-page book. And I have friends that are in book clubs, and they don't read 300-page books, anything over 300 pages. They have like a cutoff. And publishers have a cutoff. And I think in all fields now, be it publishing, be it movies, there's this kind of focus group. Let's take the last book that was successful and recreate that over and over again.
Oh, God, yeah.
These books really don't really fit into any that. So how to get it, I think I came through a great publicist to you and people like yourself. And AI for the Soul, what could be more important than that right now? I mean, what's going on?
Yeah.
I mean, and you look at the younger generation, I mean, what's going, they've grown up with this. I wasn't on social media before.
Oh, no, I'm like you.
So, no, I'm learning it all as I go, but
I have a Janis Joplin album.
It's got to have a soul.
But you see, this message transcends age and time. And I love what you've done, because you know what you've done? You've created a compelling case for us to explore ourselves, humanity, and technology in a really safe way. And I'm excited about the next book. I mean, I don't know how many books you're going to continue to write, but I will tell you, going back, given post-COVID for me, I related to them much more.
That's great.
I think we've changed. And I think what you're raising are issues about progress, but progress without humanity's greatest and the best of us is really shallow.
I agree. And thank you. The third book is the end of the trilogy, but then I will continue writing from there. But the three books are kind of one grand adventure of self-realization and thrills.
Yeah.
And there's lots of love.
There is lots of love. And don't forget, you know, when they decided to make Matrix 4, they had a 20% approval rating and 80% don't do. Because there's a point that we get to, I think, in humanity where when you create a concept, even through imagination, that doesn't make sense to everybody, it raises more questions, but not the kind of questions that lead to discovery. Michael, give out your website one more time, if you don't mind.
Oh, thank you. Michael Kelly with an EY, author.com.
And then the books are available pretty much anywhere, right? I mean, they could type in The Devil's Call, right? They could type it in and get it.
Yes, definitely.
What do you want to leave us with here? Last message, last personal message.
My last message is I'm excited about your program and AI for the Soul. So I hope we can continue to keep touch. And
we will.
And the third book, discuss that at some length as well.
We will continue. I don't know. It must be my upbringing. Must be something in my childhood. I never really saw technology and humanity at odds. And yet what I've learned is that's really the messaging that's been produced over the past decade or so. And I think what you're doing is allowing us to explore all the questions, but all the solutions. So thank you for that, Michael. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
All right, everybody. Okay, please, if you haven't gotten the first book, please get the first book, second book, and we'll stay on target. Connect with Michael. You can follow Michael as an author and elsewise. Thank you for tuning us in. We'll see you next time.
Sometimes being human has its challenges. Our physical health falters, our spirits sag, our dreams don't immediately come to fruition. Welcome to the power of Maximum Medicine Radio. Join me, Doc Martin, in conversations that will blow your mind about healing. In our hit show, Doc Martin addresses the scientific with bridging to the mystical approaches to give you a new narrative about maximum medicine. In this live call-in show, we will journey into the extraordinary genius of the human body and talk about other beliefs that impact being your multidimensional self. We seek the seen and the unseen and explore the earthbound and the otherworldly, all with the purpose of calling forth the maximum you. To learn more about Doc Martin and Maximum Medicine, visit www.SharonMartinMD.com.
Hi, everyone. I'm Dr. Pat. I'm the host of the Dr. Pat Show, and I am the creator of the Transformation Network, doing what we do in the world of positive radio, informed, educated, positive media. Independent radio hosts and independent networks have been the face of positive messaging over the past decade. So all of us here have decided we're going to put together an independent network that is going to enable people to bring their positive message of hope, inspiration, and conscious action to the forefront. Help us create a future of amazing, uplifting stories that can be told so we can tell our children and they can tell their children of what hope and conscious action is all about. I want to thank you all for tuning us in, turning us on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
Are you passionate about impacting social change or working towards anti-racism as a society? Are you willing to deconstruct your innermost thoughts, ideas, and beliefs about racism? Then Inflection Point Podcast, Cultivating Change from the Inside Out, is the show for you. Join Anita Russell, Mavis Bauman, and Gail Hunter in open, honest, and deliberate conversations every first and third Wednesday at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern, only on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
Are you ready to put down that drink or drug for good? Are you struggling to maintain your recovery from addictive behaviors? Do you need help with a family member or loved one who's in early recovery or battling addiction? Get the help and guidance you need by arranging a Recovery Recharged phone session with me, Ellen Stewart, Pushy Broad from the Bronx, certified life and recovery coach. Call 1-800-889-1757. Make an appointment today. Or go to my website, pushybroadfromthebronx.com, and click on the link that says Recovery Recharged. Don't wait. Get the help you need today. This is Ellen Stewart, Pushy Broad from the Bronx, on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
You've been listening, but are you watching? Tune in to your favorite shows on the Transformation Talk Radio Facebook page. We stream live video podcasts every day, and we love to hear from you. Leave comments and questions for the host to address live, on the air, and get to know the faces behind the voices you love. Just go to Facebook and search for Transformation Talk Radio.
Yeah, yippee skippy to that, baby.
Hey, everybody, welcome to our good news segment. Look, in the past couple of months, you heard us and our commitment to providing you with information about stress and all of the other ripple effect ventures that happen either before, after, or contribute. One of them, it is at the top of the charts. Let me just say the word sleeping. Now let me say the words trouble sleeping. Everybody out there, raise your hand. Okay, that's a lot of people, all right? But I'm not the expert in this field. Dr. Charlene Gamaldo is professor of neurology, Johns Hopkins University, and I love studies. So before we even get out of the gate, I want to just tell you, this is Dr. Charlene is a board certified sleep specialist and board certified neurology. So when you put that together, what you're going to get today is not just information about numbers and statistics, but what you can do. Before we even get going, I want you to go to this website, follow along with us. Wake Up America Survey. Wake Up America Survey. Got that? Wake Up America Survey. When you get there, you're going to go right over to the myth thing section on there, and you're going to be checking. Oh, I thought that. Right. But here we go. Anybody tired today? Dr. Gamaldo, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, Dr. Pat.
All right. I got to get some data out there because, you know, one of the things I think we all believe, we're just doing it. We're getting it. Don't worry about me. I get 4 hours of sleep. That's a good day. I'm operating. Oh, you know, I'm going to take the power nap. Well, wait a minute. Okay, I can go on. But these are the things we tell ourselves. Now, what's the reality of the situation, if you will?
So as a doctor, and this is before the work hours, right? The duty hours, that our profession was rampant with that, right? Sweeper for wimps. You don't need that. You know, I'll sleep when I'm dead, that sort of thing. Things have really taken a full circle, so much so that even within our profession, I'm recognizing that sleep is extremely important, not only for performing in the operating room, not only for making the right decisions with your patients, but also for engaging in a cooperative way within the healthcare team, at which reduces medical mistakes. So I'll just use our little bubble as an example, but that can easily be translated to anybody, you know, in their life, working with coworkers, making the right decisions and feeling comfortable with it. That's how sleep, just even on a basic level, is so important, much less at a medical and neurological level.
Yeah, of course. You know, look, one of the things I love about this is there's an alliance, and I want to talk about the Alliance for Sleep. Why? I want to tell everybody why. Because when you put an Alliance for Sleep together, you have to have a real underlying thing. The underlying thing is all you all. Because what you all have said, and here's what I believe, Dr. Gamaldo, this is what I believe. Both of us are researchers. We know that in any survey, the amount of people that one, actually answer honestly, or two, answer at all, are understated. But the Alliance for Sleep is addressing the fact that 70%, right? What? 70% people say, I'm having trouble sleeping, right? So tell us about the Alliance. And I'm sure you're reacting to that number.
I tell you, I was blown away. And even being in the sleep world for 20 plus years, I learned a lot about what my patients are suffering, how both patients and our members of our healthcare community recognize that sleep really should be one of the pillars of health. And despite that, feel desperate that they aren't getting what they need in terms of education or options. So that absolutely blew me away. The Alliance for Sleep, as you mentioned, it came together as a multidisciplinary group of sleep experts from a clinical research and sleep education standpoint for us to really address where are the gaps in our awareness. How can we get a better appreciation of the struggles for the patients and the members of the healthcare team that aren't sleep experts, who are often the first people to hear about sleep, not the sleep doctor. How can we understand that, and how can we close the gaps? So that's really the mission of the Sleep Alliance, with the overarching mission of how can we have everyone be the best sleeper they can be. That's the ultimate deal, okay. Right? So the Wake Up America survey was kind of the first step. As someone who appreciates data, Dr. Pat, was the first step in getting sort of a needs assessment. And with that, we share that now for the public so that they can see this, understand that if you're an insomnia sufferer, you're not alone. And the struggles that you're having, you're not alone, but we're on the case. And we talk a little bit about the makeup of the Alliance and what we're hoping to do. And again, it takes a village to really stomp out such a complicated issue. And that's why it takes all of us, including, Dr. Pat, the media, to help raise public awareness, as well as our patients and our health members of our healthcare team.
Yeah, what's actually shocking for me more than anything, I know the numbers, we're going to get into them, and you're going to provide us with some answers and solutions. But I will tell you, I think most people would believe, if you ask them, that sleep is already included as a pillar of health. And I do not believe it is. But when you took the survey and the numbers that came out and said it should be, I don't quite understand why we're not including it. But let's go through some of the information and maybe we can shine a light on it. I don't know that we have ever been in a situation now that we've been in, as far as my lifetime, where we're coming out of 3 years where most people have not gotten sleep. I'm just going to say that. I mean, that's a wide range, but there are effects from it. Give us a rundown, if you could, on what the most shocking, even for you, the most shocking, give us your top three when you say, oh, I'm Dr. Charlene and I was shocked about dot, dot, dot.
Yeah. Okay. So I'll give you the first of where I was coming from in terms of before I read this. So I knew for the audience, Johns Hopkins, we changed the name of our center to Johns Hopkins Center for Sleep and Wellness. Okay. So we've appreciated for a long time that sleep was important for not just how you feel, but how your body functions. So, understand, especially as a neurologist, what this means for, your ability to think, cognition, certainly your immune system, all of those things. Got that. What blew me away was the fact that we understood that the impact on your day-to-day was critical to the diagnosis of insomnia, but I didn't understand the gravity of that impact until this survey came out. I didn't understand the gravity that, 19% of folks in that survey said they lost a relationship because of their sleep. 27% and said that they directly relate their sleep to financial struggles. So that's, I think that's what blew me away more, is that I know it impacts your day, but the level of it takes it to a point where it's like, wow, folks are really struggling, and they are really like marking sleep as the reason for it.
Yeah. And, you know, let's talk about this, because we have a lot of, I love that you put this idea of a myth on your website. Because when you go through and you look at that, and for those of you thinking what website, it's real simple, wakeupamericasurvey.com. And you go over there, you're going to follow along with us if you're listening to this. And you're going to see at the top, want and frustration, night and day, my favorite, disconnect and dialogue, and myths and facts. And so when you take a look at this, I guarantee you, you'll be checking the boxes off. You're going to be checking the boxes off. What do you find out of this is one of the greatest myths, meaning these are things that we believe that aren't actually factual? Because I looked at a couple of these and I said, like, really? Like that, even for me. But what do you think people believe that is not really true and could have a negative impact on them?
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the biggest ones is the idea that, oh, as I get older, I don't need as much sleep. And that's totally
I'm like, totally, I want to meet that person.
Yeah,
I
totally meet that person. Oh yeah, you know, as you get older, you need no, that's not true. Actually, you need the same amount. It's just that you're not as efficient as you are when you're 20, because just that's your brain physiology. So it's not that you don't need less, you just actually probably need to spread it out over a longer period of time, i.e. you may need to nap and that sort of thing. That's one thing. The other thing was what I did like that was gleaned from the myths was that folks appreciate sleep hygiene and appreciate like these sort of behaviors, but the myth was that that's all you need, and that's not all you need. Oftentimes when you get to the point where you're hitting an insomnia diagnosis, you need sleep hygiene and then some. There may be more specific targeted behaviors beyond just sort of a blanket template. It has to get personalized to the individual in terms of what other medical conditions are going on, in terms of what other, you know, impact from stress, from their environment, you know, from medical conditions. All that has to come into play when you're personalizing a treatment plan for the individual. Sleep is the ultimate, I would say, poster child for precision medicine.
I like that you said that. I want to go, I know these are really short interviews, so I want to get to what people can do if you're struggling with sleep. Because one of the things that I recognize, and I think you have it somewhere in your data, is the minute you say the word insomnia, people say, no, that's not me. One, because they don't understand it probably is them. And because it's a word that has been stigmatized for so long. But again, you know what, they're going to go look at the website, they're going to go look at the survey. But, you know, you're sitting there. What would you suggest for people now? What are some of the tips that you could give them? And then also help them recognize, yeah, you may be experiencing insomnia.
So a few things. A, that we all have a unique, somewhat unique personality for our sleep and what our sleep needs are. So when someone says, oh, I only need 4 hours, why do you need, like, we're all different. We have different specific needs, different windows, a period where we're going to get the best sleep and that sort of thing. So don't always compare yourself to John across the street in terms of what they're doing to make. So stop doing that. The other thing is to know this, that yes, all of us will have a bad night's sleep every now and again. That is normal. That is normal. That's that may be insomnia symptom. What is not normal and what should not be blown off is if you've hit the diagnosis of insomnia, the clinical diagnosis, and that's when it becomes the rule of threes, where you're having problems with your sleeping more than 3 days a week for over 3 months, and you can directly link that to problems you're having during the day, this is not something to blow off. This is not just a run of the mill. I'm not going to worry about it. It's time to have it addressed with a healthcare provider.
I had someone say to me the other day, I was telling them about the show we're going to do right here. And they said, I don't have any problem with sleeping. I just take Benadryl. What problems do I have? I don't have any problems. I just take Benadryl every night. There's no problem with me sleeping. And, you know, I didn't have a word to say about that. I said, just listen to the interview. But you see, that is a normality now that we have really imposed on ourselves. Oh, I just take that, I don't have any trouble in sleeping, right? You see the confusion?
Yeah. And I mean, I would say whenever you feel like there's an intervention that you have to provide, short of like, you know, sleep hygiene, similar to dental hygiene. Like, yeah. We all need to floss more. You know, there are basic behaviors, yeah. But when there's intervention beyond then, it's worth considering, okay, am I doing this? Because again, I have problems three times a week for more than 3 months. Then it's worth discussing with the provider, because maybe that intervention you're using is not the best, or maybe fine. Maybe it's perfectly fine and you can get reassurance, but that's when it's time to just consult with a healthcare expert. You know, you owe that to yourself. You deserve that.
Yeah. All the things we believe that insomnia doesn't do for us or doesn't affect us, we need to read, because it does. I want to thank you for today. Again, tell people how they can find out more. And I would like to know your personal message, because we're not talking about something that is one or two or three people. This is really at epic proportions when we really get down to it. And it affects every area of our lives, doesn't it?
Absolutely. My analogy is that sleep is the steering wheel in a car. So do you need a steering wheel for the car to move? And no, if you got four wheels, you can do it. But if you don't have the steering wheel, it's not going to drive straight. And that's the pillar of sleep. If sleep is messed up, nothing else works well. It's nothing else is going to go in the direction that you want it to go. So that's how I see sleep. It truly is the pillar for medical health function and wellness. Period. In terms of where folks can get more information, I remind them again to go to wakeupamericasurvey.com. Again, it can provide awareness about if you're having insomnia, that you're not alone, education in terms of some of the myth busting that we may have. And also, you know, more, a little bit more about this alliance that I'm really proud to be a part of, which is this group of really renowned experts, for us to, again, close the gap in terms of education, awareness, and even creating some resources and tools to help those in need.
Thank you so much for today. There's so much more to talk about, but there's a lot that you all have put together. Thank you for tackling a conversation that very few are willing to tackle, because the magnitude of what happens when you don't sleep by far is understated. And we need to really get the word out. Thank you so much for all of that.
Oh, thank you, Dr. Pat. Thank you for having me.
You bet. Hey, everybody, lots more. Go ahead. WakeUpAmericaSurvey.com. There's a lot of information. But, you know, do yourself a favor. Talk to your family. Talk about this. Do not hide it. Call your doctor, practitioner, call your naturopath. I don't care who you call, but please don't keep it in the closet. Dr. Charlene is not. Let's take a short break. We'll be right back.
Views expressed on this program are those of the host, guests, and callers, and do not necessarily reflect the views of the station, its management, or advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.